Will the House please come to order? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson. Anderson. Bagby. Bagby. Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Licorice.
Here.
Bonner. Bonner. Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Byrd.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Carson.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Cohey.
Here.
Connolly. Connolly. Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Hales.
Here.
Hallinan. Hallinan excused. Hammonds. Harshman. Harshman. Harvey.
Here.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Kimball. Kimball. Landon.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Millen.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Philp excused. Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlek.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Swanitzer Dan.
Here.
Swanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Anderson.
Excuse.
Anderson excused. Bagby.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Harshman. Kimball. Kimball excused. 56 present, 4 excused.
The prayer today is by Pastor Galen Huck from Cheyenne, representing Cheyenne Hills Church. Pastor Huck.
You pray with me. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for this new day. I thank you for this new week, and I pray for your blessing and your favor on the decisions in this house today. Lord, it's humbling to think that the government rests on your shoulders. That's what you said. And Father, I pray that you would look with favor on the policies that will be drawn up, that will be discussed. I pray for the men and women in this house, that for your favor on their families. Is there a way for these weeks? Take care of their homes, their families, their businesses. Father, I pray for peace in the process of the discussion. I pray for wisdom in the decisions. Father, and I pray that they would be able to hear your wisdom. Proverbs chapter 8 says this, does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights along the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates leading into the city, at the entrances, she cries out aloud. To you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare to her. Father, I pray that today this house would hear your wisdom. Lord, that this state would benefit from your wisdom. That you would honor those who implement wisdom with a garland, as you say in your word. And God, that you would be ultimately glorified. Lord, I know that there's going to be times when the way is dark. I know party lines will be drawn. And I know it will be difficult. And God, at that time, I pray that wisdom's voice would be heard. I pray for the courage it takes to implement wisdom. Lord, I thank you in advance what you're going to do in this 60th legislative session. I pray for your favor, and I pray this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I didn't want to say anything. No, I just wanted to hear.
What do you think?
Oh,
what's an internal?
I like it the way it is. It is an interim study. Let's talk about it. I'd like, you know, we need to figure.
We can either, well, you want a task force, we need to do it on the subject. So you want a committee to do it?
Yeah, I know it. Yeah. No, I thought you did a good job.
During this morning, sometimes we get to legislative John to get together with you and I and have him draft something for us?
Sure. Good morning. Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 12, 2010 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Barbuto, Representative Moniz.
Representative Lockhart, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to re-refer House Bill 72 to your Appropriations Committee.
Hearing no objection to the re-referral of House Bill 72, it is so ordered. Madam Minority Caucus Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I was going to be introducing my son Matthew today as a page this morning, but he just went home ill, and I'm not sure, but I think it might have been from three donuts and Mountain Dew and Laffy Taffy while I was in committee meeting. But for those of you that saw the little redhead for a little bit, he was here, and won't be here. And it also is my privilege to introduce my good friend and one of the docs that I work with at the Cheyenne Eye Clinic. I think that Dr. Randy Johnston is one of the best surgeons that there probably is in the country, and he is currently the president of the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Dr. Randy Johnston.
Welcome, Dr. Johnston. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. You could have treated Matthew had he stuck around. I did see him this morning at 8 o'clock standing next to the donuts. He looked okay then, but I don't know what happened after that. Representative Lubnow, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two things. Number one, I stopped and saw the good doctor from House District 32 this weekend. He will be going home either Tuesday or Wednesday from the transitional care unit at the hospital in the center of the state. I asked him if he had any words of wisdom for the members of the legislature that I could pass on, and he smiled and thought for a minute in his slow, sly way, and then he said, tell them all to take care of themselves. The other item I have is on the speaker's right, or on the speaker's left, our right, is the guest page of the day. The other one, making his third consecutive appearance in the Wyoming House, Thomas Edwin Lubnow III.
Yeah. Welcome back to the House, Tommy. I did, and I deserved it. Representative Roscoe, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, since no one will come down and visit me from Sublette or Teton County, I would like to introduce two of my most favorite people from a part of the country that gives us a lot of trouble, back east. And the gentleman grew up across the street from me, beat me at every sporting event we ever attempted, went on to become an All-American baseball player and marry my sister. And my sister happens to teach kindergarten. Her kindergarten student won a silver medal in the Olympics yesterday. So you can thank Mary. Mary and Tim Tobin, thank you very much.
Welcome to the House. Welcome to the House. Representative Yagi, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd really like to welcome some educators from Southwest Wyoming came down to visit us up, check up on us, and make sure we're doing as good as we can for education. We have Toby Casper, Tyler Ruby, Don Gertz, Bonnie Matlock, Carol Jellicoe, John Freeman, who is also on the Board of Trustees for Western Wyoming Community College, Ed DeCastro, and Ron Walker. We'd like to welcome them to the House.
Welcome to the House, ladies and gentlemen. Representative Esquivel, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a reminder of the legislative appreciation lunch today at Father Factor. I know a lot of you look forward to that. For those of you that have not ever made it, you just go out the north doors there of the Hirschler Building, and it's right across the street there at 218 West 26th, and you probably have an invitation somewhere.
Thank you. I would like to take a few moments of privilege of the floor myself. I spoke with Representative Philp yesterday. He may not be here at all this week. But he says he's feeling better than he's felt in some time. There, he just needs some additional testing. So we'll hope to see him by the end of the week, but we will keep you posted. We have a special guest with us today and who you'll be seeing, I'm sure, around in the Capitol and at various events, former Speaker of the House from Freedom, Wyoming, Randall B. Luthy. Where is Randall in the gallery? Well, he snuck out on me. He snuck out. But he's around. And then I would like to introduce you all to my secretary for at least 10 years in Cody. She is a native of Lusk, Sheila Bolden. She's here today for the first time at the legislature. And she's a wonderful gal, a wonderful Wyoming native, and does a great job for me, and wanted to acknowledge Sheila here in the gallery. Thanks. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 77. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, excused, Childers, signed, Representative Brown, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 8. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Davison, Yagi, Shepperson, Thompson. No, Connolly, excused, Childers, signed, Representative Kermit Brown, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 11, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Esquivel, Harvey, Kimball, Landon. No. Shepperson. Excused. Hallinan. Millen. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Are there any re-referrals? Chairman Childers. I don't think your mic's on there.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to re-refer House Bill 77, Youth Archery Licenses to Appropriations.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to re-refer House Bill 11 that had to do with the cancer control to number two, appropriations.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 11 is referred to committee number two, appropriations. Any other re-referrals? We're at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 2.
House Bill 2, introduced by the Agriculture Committee and Act Relating to Veterinarians.
House Bill 2 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 12.
House Bill 12, introduced by the Judiciary and Act Relating to Juvenile Detention Facilities.
House Bill 12, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 13.
House Bill 13, introduced by the Judiciary and Act Relating to Alcohol Regarding Underage Drinking.
House Bill 13, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 16.
House Bill 16, introduced by Representative Buchanan and Act Relating to Private School Licensing.
House Bill 16, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 17.
House Bill 17, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to environmental quality regarding carbon sequestration, financial assurances, and regulation.
House Bill 17, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 22.
House Bill 22, introduced by Representative Anderson, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding streamlined sales use tax amendments.
House Bill 22, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 26.
House Bill 26, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Administration of Government Medical Review Panel.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 26 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment takes into account a situation where there's a severe discrepancy between what someone says before the medical review panel and what they say at trial. And it says that matters of fact in the, that are represented to be true in the medical review panel are admissible at trial for one single purpose, and that would be impeachment. And impeachment is the process by which a witness is confronted with prior inconsistent testimony and at least asked to explain the difference. Now, this says I was asked to think about a little bit of wiggle room in here, and I think the answer to that is that though this amendment says matters before the medical review panel shall be admissible for purposes of impeachment, still in the end, the trial judge is the gatekeeper on impeachment. And he's the one who makes a determination, he or she is the one who makes a determination whether the impeachment is appropriate, whether it's material, and whether it's relevant. And so I'm not too worried about that. This simply says that if there are inconsistencies between what's before the medical review panel and what is presented in court, that a witness can be confronted with that, and his for purposes of impeachment would be, which would be at a minimum, a requirement that he explain, he or she explain, why they made a different representation in the medical review panel. So I'd stand for any questions, Mr. Speaker, and urge adoption of this amendment.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that this amendment actually helps the process. It was our understanding that it could be that the case wouldn't be fully developed by the time it went to the medical review panel. And so we wanted to, in this case, I think what that does is that allows the judge then to look at that and see whether, if there is an inconsistency, whether that was due to that case being needing to be developed more or whether there really was an intent to deceive. And so I think that this is the type of, it looks like a constructive amendment to me. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question for the sponsor of the amendment. I think it's a good amendment. My question would be, prior to the amendment, it's talking about panel deliberations and decision of the panel and materials submitted. I'm assuming that testimony was to be included as part of that, or maybe it wasn't. If it was, what would prevent the trial court for using the rules of evidence in allowing that testimony at trial for the purposes of impeachment? And if that was not the case, if testimony wasn't ever admissible, should we add that to this amendment to make clear that it's not just the decision of the panel or materials, perhaps documents, but also testimony?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand the amendment. Page 2, line 19, it would say the decision of the panel and any material submitted by the parties thereto shall be admissible for the purpose of impeachment in whole or in part in any subsequent trial of the matter subject to the discretion of the trial court. And then page 2, line 21, after strike the comma and insert and. I thought I heard the sponsor of the amendment say that it would somehow be limited to the impeachment only. Maybe I didn't hear that correctly, but the way I read it as it is, if the intent is that it's only admissible for impeachment, I don't read it as exclusive. I read it as being inclusive, so it could be admissible for any other purpose also. Although it does say for the purpose of impeachment, it doesn't limit it in the way that you typically would, that would say it would be limited for the purpose of impeachment only. And if that's your intent, I think you need some additional clarifying language in there. I wonder what the sponsor thinks about that.
Representative Brown.
Madam Majority Whip, that's a good suggestion, and I would ask that the amendment be passed, and I'll look at a third reading amendment that would simply insert the word only after the word impeachment. As to the question that was raised by the Majority Floor Leader testimony, I would like to take another look at that and consider a third reading amendment, which would be minor, to make it clear that testimony is included in the material that could be used for impeachment.
Representative Brown, would you like to continue with this amendment or bring a third reading amendment? It's up to you. I would suggest maybe you withdraw it since we've had the opportunity to address it and we'll know what you're talking about on third reading.
Mr. Speaker, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well, thank you.
And so I do withdraw the amendment.
The second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 26 is hereby withdrawn. Thank you, Representative Brown. House Bill 26 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 32.
House Bill 32, introduced by Representative Stepson, an act relating to professions and occupations, Board of Nursing, continuing jurisdiction.
House Bill 32 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 36.
House Bill 36, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to notaries.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 36 and urge your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this is designed to prevent a disaster that's easier than one would think. We typically have two kinds of attestation, so to speak. I think that's a good word, at the bottom of a document. One is an acknowledgement, and the other is a jurat. And the acknowledgement is defined in this act and says basically that when a notary public does an acknowledgement, they ascertain that the person who is signing the document is the person they purport to be and that they're doing it of their own free will, and if they're signing in a representative capacity, that they have authority to sign in that representative capacity. That's the acknowledgement. That typically goes on deeds, all instruments of conveyance. It's the county clerk is constrained. There's really, as I've always understood it, two absolute requirements to record a document with the county clerk. One is a legal description, and the other is an acknowledgement. Separate and apart from that is this thing we call a jurat, J-U-R-A-T. In a jurat, the individual signs. And besides all those things that are in an acknowledgement, the individual signs under oath before a notary public that the matters stated in the document are true and correct. Typically, in this day and age, jurats and acknowledgements are loaded in the computer, and secretaries are doing the work. No offense to your secretary, Mr. Speaker. And occasionally, more often than you'd think, young attorneys, old attorneys, secretaries alike will mistakenly put a jurat on a document that really requires an acknowledgement. And documents with jurats are recordable if they're affidavits, but not otherwise. Now, picture this scenario. Somebody gets an emergency call from the hospital. Death is imminent. There's a request to make a conveyance, a deathbed conveyance. A deed is hastily prepared. A jurat's mistakenly put on the bottom of the document. It's not noticed. They run up and get it signed. The person dies. The deed goes to the clerk's office with a jurat on it, and they say, you can't record it. And I won't say that this ever happened to me. I wouldn't want to admit that. But one time, when we needed a quitclaim deed to fix one of these, plenty bad, I sent a friend of mine, a realtor, to Saratoga with a deed, and he got to the house just as the lady was coming out the door feet first. So it happens, and it just makes you sick. So I took a look within the act and said, and I've often wondered this, a jurat seems to be of a higher dignity or a greater examination by the notary of what's going on than the acknowledgement is. So why couldn't a properly executed jurat, which fulfills all the requirements for an acknowledgement, be acceptable on an instrument of conveyance? So that's the purpose of this amendment. I believe that everything that has to be done in an acknowledgement has to be done in a jurat plus, and so we simply say in here that a jurat will fulfill all of the, or satisfy any requirement for an acknowledgement. That's the explanation, Mr. Speaker, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a really good amendment, and I would urge you to support it. It helps the bill.
Anyone else wish to speak on second reading amendment number one? All right, question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number one to House Bill 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading, amendment number 1 to House Bill 36 has passed. House Bill 36 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 37.
House Bill 37, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to mandatory judicial retirement.
House Bill 37 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 41.
House Bill 41, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance distance education.
House Bill 41 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 4.
House Joint Resolution number 4, introduced by Representative Gingrey, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to remove any mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices and judges of other courts in Wyoming.
House Joint Resolution 4 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved into committee of the whole. Thomas E. Lebnow III. Oh, excuse me, Representative Stubson. Hey!
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 46. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 46, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommend that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan, signed Representative Semlek, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Philp. Signed Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlek?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 46 do pass. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first of two bills that we will be looking at during the budget session this year. This is the planning bill. The construction bill will come over from the other body, and we will be talking about that later. The chairman of the Select Water Committee did made some comments with respect to how the Water Development Commission works during the discussion of this bill on introduction. I would like to point out the matter of a couple housekeeping chores for you. We have distributed on the floor just a few minutes ago kind of a cheat sheet, as we would refer it, as to the individual projects that are going to be funded in this bill for this first half of this biennium. You can see in the left-hand column of that sheet, it talks about the bill, the page number of the bill. And then also distributed earlier in the session last week, there was the 2010 legislative report from the Water Development Commission. If you are interested in looking at a lengthy explanation of each of these projects that we're considering in this planning bill, you can find that in that document. And because of that, I, unless there were some questions, I won't go into any particular detail on any one of these projects. I would just point out to you, though, for your information, relative to the funding that would be available for the different water accounts. We have the three water development accounts, and for for the biennium in water account one, we'll have about $57 million available. And then in the water development account two, for this biennium, we'll have a little over $17 million available. And then in the water account three, which is considered to be our account that we're going to use for the development of large water storage projects in Wyoming as they become available and as permitting becomes available, we have $128 million available in that account as it stands right now. The projects that we are considering under this omnibus water bill, they have first gone through the Water Development Commission staff, and then they are approved by the Water Development Commission, which there's a commissioner from each of the water districts across the state, and then the final approval before they come to the legislature is done through the Select Water Committee. So they've had a lot of review just for the benefit of some of the new members on the floor. That's kind of the way the process works. And this is kind of the watered-down version. If you have any questions about any particular project, we'll try to address them. The chairman of the Select Water Committee maybe is making his way towards the podium. Maybe he's not. But between the, we'll try to answer some questions. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill in kind of a brief synopsis here.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a question on level two projects, new development. That's the second group. And I noticed the water weather modification pilot research is in there. It's a continuation of an existing program. I was wondering if anybody could share with this body what the success has been on, I believe it was almost $5 million the first time we did this project. $7 million? $8 million. And I'm just curious as to what kind of success we've had and to make sure in my mind it's something we want to continue.
Chairman Anderson.
This is a controlled experiment there in the mostly in the Snowy Range area where they try to get clouds that they can seed, and then somewhere else there's clouds look just about the same that they don't seed, and then measure the snowfall from each. And up till now, even as much as a skeptic as I was to start with, I kind of called it snake oil to start with. It looks like pretty conclusive proof that at least 10% more water coming from those seeded clouds. And Idaho has been working somewhat the same experiment, and they claim that's worth a dollar. It's costing about a dollar for an acre foot of water, which is hard to even believe that it'd be that cheap. But to think it costs you whatever it is to build storage for an acre foot, it's in the hundreds of dollars. And so right now it looks like more than a worthy program to go forth with.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you. Along the same lines, the testimony that we heard in committee was that the preliminary results from the research indicate a 10% increase in the amount of water, and that when the research is done, which is what this would allow to happen, that the cost for producers, for users, for the folks who would benefit from this will be substantially less than this very detailed and controlled research.
Chairman Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that a lot of work goes into this planning, and I'm just curious because the amounts for planning and engineering are very high. And then when you look at the book, and if any of you have not looked at your large water development book, 2010, it would be a good thing to do because I think that it also promotes economic development in your communities. We know that water is very important. But I also noticed that there will be a plan or a design, some construction, and then there will be further requests for construction or design. How does that work in your committee when you're planning how you make those decisions to move into those different phases? And, you know, we always sign off on this legislation as the work has all been done. But when you look at the millions of dollars that are being spent here, I think it's critical that we all take a responsibility and review it closely. And if someone could help me with that process, and also how many different engineers or groups are in-state versus out-of-state. Thank you very much.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair. Great question. Specifically with regard to what we're discussing today, the weather modification study, I know for a fact that there were multiple delays in the upfront permitting and kickoff period for this study. The NEPA process, permits with our federal land managers ultimately delayed this to the point that, I mean, as we all know, delays cost money. And from what I've been told, this for this one project, this has been responsible for the project going beyond the initial five-year period, as well as adding some what we would call significant dollars to this. When we have airplanes at the ready, I mean, these are highly technical and specific aircraft that do this. I'm not a pilot, but these are pretty sweet aircraft, and we had to keep these ready to go. And as has been said, the numbers that are coming in that we're starting to see does validate expectations, and of course this has a significant, I would call, statewide importance. This will benefit not only a water short basin, the North Platte Basin, but also will benefit our Colorado Basin water users as well. And we all know the pressures that are happening there. With respect to an overall question on how the agency deals with additional requests for money. And being an ex-commissioner, I can assure you that all of the dedicated commissioners that are appointed by the governor struggle with this. And just to answer it in a general terms, they look very closely at each one and scrutinize the reasons. And from my limited memory, of course, what happens in this process, they try to think of everything and then put a dollar figure to it. And I think it is fair to say that when the bids come in, the bids match the dollars appropriated. And what happens, unfortunately, if something is forgotten about through the planning process, of course, it will cost more, and all I can do to give you some comfort, if you will, that we do have a pretty darn good process, and you know, I think they are good stewards of the public trust. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more question. And as much as we never see this, and I know we've got a very good water development select committee and the process, but I look here and I see $1,490,000 under research, master plans, et cetera, which is consulting money, I would imagine, money going out to consulting firms. Down there's some others that went down that have several alternative analyses on project storage projects. A lot of those go out. How much of this money are we recapture? I mean, it's I get nervous sometimes because we see it in other areas that we're in, and we appropriate money, nice round numbers. And if the money's out there, who's watching it and how much of it reverts back? Or do they spend it all on the plan? And maybe some of that's not that necessary. Do we have a good watchdog on that?
Chairman Anderson.
We do. Most of these planning projects are funded by the state 100%. Then when the construction projects go in, most of those are 60, 30, 70. 30% loan, 70% grant. I want to remind you that municipalities in the state take about $16 million a year average to work in water projects for those municipalities. That's hardly ever mentioned when we appropriate monies for municipalities, but that's a pretty good chunk of money that they would otherwise have to use or other dollars for as they come in. And those projects are well planned out so that long-range plans, short-range plans, what they need and what they're going to need in the future. And so it's worked pretty good. We all think they're too high priced to everybody, but the engineers that are working on it.
Chairman Burr.
Thank you. And, well, we have the good chairman up there in the front. The other question I have is, how much are you seeing small subdivisions or sort of like communities that have been developed or constructed that were done with private dollars or established and then become incorporated so that they can take advantage of the grant process with state monies? I'm noticing some different communities in these reports, and I just wondered how that's going along and what kind of scrutiny you're putting on that.
Chairman Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, in the past, that has been a major problem where subdividers have come in and then gone broke and left those households without any water, and we've had to come in. We've headed most of that off by making those projects that the county commissioners have to approve of them before they get a loan. They have to have backups, and so we're seeing a minimum amount of those now. Some of those real old subdivisions that have got into some problems, and we're doing a pipeline outside of Newcastle for a little subdivision. They've been hauling water. They bought those houses. They knew they were going to have to haul water, but all of a sudden, hauling water's got really expensive. So some of those things are still showing up where citizens of this are in a bind, no way of financing it, and so we come in and design those things and fund them, and their water bill goes from whatever it is. In that one instance, I asked the question, are you going to be happy with $100 a month water bill? We can handle it. It's cheaper than hauling it. So they get pretty well paid for, like anybody else's.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that question and applaud the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. That has, as the good chairman of Select Water has said, that has been a problem over the years. Once you get 20 taps, if you are an approved subdivision, then you'd be eligible. And it is hard to turn those projects down. People come in and they bring their kids, and they don't have water. And as the good chairman said, we're working through the county commission and approval process. So you're really looking for a certificate of adequacy if you approve a subdivision to make sure that if you're going to offer that for sale, that if it's going to be individual wells, that the water is available there, so that it doesn't become a cost shifting on the public in general through the water development account. That's up to that's a responsibility, we believe, through the people who are developing the land. The second response to that would be that we've tried to orient the development of Wyoming Water through regional master plans, and that has also helped, so that subdivisions setting near to each other, we ask them to begin that conversation of if we're going to develop water for, let's say, for those two
form some kind of a joint powers agreement. Let's conserve two of Wyoming's precious resources, its water and its aquifers, and also in our money. So we're moving in that direction. I think we're headed in the right direction with that regard. But we really want to put the onus back on the developers to make sure that if they offer that land for people, that there is water available there.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me go back to the weather modification, if I could. A couple of issues have been raised that take me back 6 years or so when we started this program. It was a great debate, and it was represented to us that this was to be the definitive study in the field. If you were to Google snowmaking, or a more appropriate term, weather modification, National Academy of Sciences, you'll find that this has been studied. It's been studied probably hundreds of times, all with funded studies, all with some level of credibility in the agency financing the operation. We were told this would be the definitive study. And I've tried to follow it as it continues and gets extended. And my question now is, what's the end point? When do we state and take the data and have the folks who are involved in this study with the knowledge to make a definitive statement about the success or value? When are they prepared to say that? Do we wait until we get a significant change in the climate cycle, which we can't predict, that would justify someone saying it's definitive? All I'm looking for is an end date, and I was unable to get one in our previous discussions leading up to this point. It's one thing to say 10%. That's anecdotal evidence, and a dollar an acre foot is even more anecdotal. I urge someone to be thinking seriously about how we might be able to put an end date on this research project. It is not unique. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is my understanding that after this next year, we will have enough data that we'll be able to determine the feasibility of this project. As far as weather modification in general, you can't just make a blanket statement from one range to the next and assume that the results are going to be the same. For us to develop whether or not weather modification is going to be feasible in the Wind River and the Sierra Madre, we actually have to test in that area. And what we've done is we've developed a process by which we have a separate group that's not biased that will actually analyze that data. Once we implement the program, if we determine that it's economically feasible and that the results are going to be substantial enough for us to move forward, the implementation of the program is going to be substantially cheaper. If we bail out at this point, the $8 million that we have spent to try and develop the feasibility will have been washed down the drain. So I would urge the body to stick with this for one more biennium. It's not coming out of the general fund. We've got the money available. We need to follow this thing through so that we haven't wasted the money that we've already previously invested.
Chairman Anderson.
And as far as an end date, if it works, if it proves that we're all pretty well convinced it works, there will be no end date. We'll want to keep on doing it, and it'll cost some dollars to do it. The other thing that I probably didn't answer, most of those municipal loans are 30-70, and the loan portion comes back into the water funds and to be reused again. Now, there are some projects that are 50%, 50%. Some of them are the other way around, mostly loan, depending on what it is. But most of the municipal projects are that 30% loan, 60% grant. And that loan money, as it's paid back with interest, it comes back into the fund that it is taken out of.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the water modification questions, we do appreciate an inquiry into that program, and we did the same in committee. We did ask a lot of questions from the director, and kind of at least my final summary, a comment on water modification that I don't think I've heard that yet, is in the Seminole Reservoir in itself, there's about a million acre feet of water. We heard about an increase through the study of a 10% yield, and that would that would be 100,000 acre feet additional water in the Seminole alone. So we are conscious of the concern, and we did do quite a little probing and inquiring with respect to this particular item in the planning bill. So hopefully that helps answer some of your questions, and we could try to do additional answering if necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 46 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 46 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 27. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 27, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to special license plates, armed forces license plate fees, and distribution. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which respectfully recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, Madden, excused, Hallinan, signed, representing Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 27 do pass. Many of you may remember this bill in its original intent last year in the 2009 general session. As it passed the House, there was a $30 fee to compense the agency that provides our license plates to us each cycle now for every 7 or 8 years, whatever the cycle period is. The original intent also was for a $20 annual fee to go voluntarily from people that choose to have one of these license plates to go to the Veterans Affairs Commission. That was on an annual basis. And that's the way it passed, and it went down to the Senate. During a moment of confusion in the Senate, rare as it may be, they amended the bill to where all $50 goes to YDOT at one time for the annual cycle, and that did little or nothing, actually nothing, for the Veterans Affairs Commission. What this bill does is brings it back to the original intent in the House. It was questioned in committee the other night that the very rare confusion developed in the Senate a year ago. How would that be prevented this year? And the Veterans Affairs people tell us that they have talked to the people that had issues over in the Senate and that that would be negated this year. So, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly rise in support of this proposed legislation we have on general file. We looked at this closely in Transportation Committee, as our good chairman has just indicated. We had very little opposition to this, and being a retired military officer and past commander of a VFW post and American Legion, I certainly would exhort the body to move forward on this legislation. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I have, I would like the chairman of Transportation to explain the fiscal note. I went to the committee meeting. I had concerns about starting to fund everything out of, you know, another license plate, another special fund. I was convinced that this is a whole different operation, but the fiscal note that's here says that the Department of Transportation will collect annually instead of every 8 years. Would you like to cover that, Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Cohey?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's a great question, and it did come up the other day. But the $20 fee that goes to the Veterans Affairs Commission will be the only fee that will be collected annually. With the redistribution of the license plates 8 years hence, there will be another $30 charged to compense YDOT for the cost of the license plate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that I had a lot to do with a few years ago, and I think we had it right when we got it out of here. And I'm going to use my good friend who is no longer with us expression. This is a really good bill.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I know this is a fairly small amount of money. I'm not sure that the Senate was addled or not, or whether they intended it. That that this support the highway fund. It does seem like this is kind of an earmarking proposal. When it is earmarked in a method like this, does it still require appropriation whenever the money is goes then to the Veterans Commission?
Chairman Kogi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seems to be the same sense of confusion that the Senate suffered about a year ago. What happens in the first year, right now the way the statute reads, is that the entire $50 goes to YDOT. In the first year, its original intent, if it were to have remained the same as it was as it left the House a year ago, YDOT would have received their $30 for the costs of the manufacturing of the special plate. $20 would have went to the Veterans Affairs Commission. During this next year, with the statutory change, the $20,000 you see there will actually, the $20,000 that was received by YDOT to date with the construction of the new plate, if the bill were in its original intent as it left the House, YDOT would not have received that $20,000. It would have gone to the Veterans Affairs Commission. That's why you see a reduction in highway funding from YDOT, because technically, had the bill remained intact as it left the House 1 year ago, YDOT would not have received that $20,000. Only the monies necessary to reimburse them or pay them for the cost of the special plate.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second part of my question was, now that that money is going to the Veterans Commission, what happens to it then? Do they have a discretion in where they spend that, or does it first have to be go through the Appropriations Committee and be appropriated like other funds before they can direct that in where they would like?
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I can faithfully answer that the Veterans Affairs Commission does have a group of commissioners that determine how best to spend all forms of revenue stream that they have, and they get it from a variety of directions, some of from the state of Wyoming and certainly some from vehicles like this, pardon the pun. But they do responsibly use and utilize the revenue stream that they have to go out and support veterans issues and to discuss with veterans of the state of Wyoming, which number about 54,000, in the benefits that they have coming to them. Many of them are totally unaware of the benefits that they have earned with their service in military capacity, and that's what the Veterans Affairs Commission does. I remember with the creation of the Veterans Affairs Commission, some, as Mr. Chairman may, about 11 or 12 years ago, that was the purpose and the intent of the Veterans Affairs Commission was to develop a small revenue stream to go out and assist our veterans of the state in letting them know what their benefits are and that they should certainly be utilizing them if the need be.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And going along with what the good chairman has indicated, that in addition to the fact that the Veterans Commission uses it to support some of the programs affiliated with families while there's deployment of the troops in various capacities, they also work with the posts on the Legion level and the VFW for implementation of veteran programs. So it's well used, and it's a broad spread over the military contingent of the state of Wyoming is the way it's being used.
Representative Madden.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the transportation chairman, I think I heard you say that this $20 fee is an annual fee, and I was only using one ear because I had somebody talking in the other one, but I think it's just every time you buy one of these license plates, isn't it? It's not an annual $20. And I guess the other thing, I don't know if anybody's mentioned it, but it was brought up in committee that it's a gray area from a constitutional standpoint because it's you're really diverting public money in kind of a tying contract that says that you know, we'll sell you one of these licenses for $30, but you also got to write another check for $50 to give to this agency that the applicant may or may not be interested in donating to. And they, you know, whether or not they're constitutionally qualified was something we spent some time talking about.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That question was raised in the committee, and we had a discussion on that. Following the committee work that passed it out, I had a discussion with the LSO, and there isn't a constitutional issue on this particular allocation of funds because it's a donation that's put forward to the Veterans Commission, and so there's not any constitutional question with it.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to answer the question of the good representative from House District 40, I do stand corrected. That is a one-time fee each time the license plate cycles. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it is a totally a voluntary system where if a veteran prefers to have a specialized license plate, it's up to him or her to do that. And and the $50 fee each license plate cycle of 8 years, $30 of that goes to the agency for the production of the plate, and the $20 does go to the Veterans Affairs Commission.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Concluding comments, testimony we heard in the committee, just for the body. The question was asked about how many veterans do we have in the state of Wyoming. The answer was right at 54,000 veterans for a population that's under 600,000. We have a large proportion here, and this is one way that we can recognize and assist these people.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I heard that it would be collected when you apply for the plate, the $20. The assumptions on page three for the fiscal note says the Department of Transportation fee will be collected annually instead of once every 8 years. Did I miss something?
Chairman Cohey.
The assumption is incomplete, Mr. Chairman, in that there will be more and more veterans annually that will consider purchasing a plate. For example, right now, in the year 2010, they may just have a standard plate like many of us. Next year, they may choose to have another one, and then year after that and year after that, what their expectation is that as time goes by, many of our veterans will choose to have one of these and will voluntarily give $50 of their hard-earned money for the purpose of production of and the utilization of a specialized plate.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 27 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 27 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 88. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 88, introduced by the Appropriation Committee, an act relating to public retirement plans. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Phelps, signed, representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Pedersen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 88 do pass, and I will cover the bill now. I've passed out a little handout for you. It's about a page and a half, and it's just an issue brief, and I'm going to go over it. And as I spoke about when we originally brought this up, there are 8 cleanup issues, exactly 0 of which are controversial. This is all brought to us. We work with the Wyoming Retirement System in our committee, and this is largely cleanup to keep us compliant with the Internal Revenue Code, the Internal Revenue System. Rather than going through the bill in each section and telling you what it refers back to, because these 8 issues appear multiple times throughout the bill, I'm instead going to talk about the issue and then point out where in the bill you can find that. The first issue is that the Internal Revenue Code limits the benefits for qualified plans. While programs have been administered to comply with these requirements, the statutes don't specifically require these limits. And where you're going to find this within the bill, it appears in 93-415D, 93418F, 93431H, 93432N, 93610F, 93707D, and 155409C. Issue number two is relatively self-explanatory. It's merely a cleanup amendment. We just need to insert the word reasonable in front of administrative expenses, and this appears in 9-3-407C, Romanet 6. Issue number three is for IRS qualification. There needs to be a provision for benefits to be payable at the termination of the system. So that we pay out if we cease to exist as a system, that we need to pay out the benefits that are accrued to each member. And that appears in 9-3-428A, Romanet 2 and B. Issue number four. The Internal Revenue Code limits the service of purchase credits and requires qualified plans to provide for rollovers from other qualified plans. Now, the Wyoming retirement system currently complies with the IRS requirements, but these requirements are not stated in statute. And this appears in 93402A, Romanet 27, and Romanet 28, 93415D, 93424A, 93602A, Romanet 19 and Romanet 20, 93617D, 3529101A, Romanet 8, and 9, and 35-29-12. Issue 5, the Internal Revenue Code prohibits using forfeiture amounts to increase member benefits. This appears in 9-3-424A. Issue number 6 is for internal and for the IRS qualification purposes, this provision should include a statement that the plan is intended to be permanent but can still allow for legislative changes. This is in 9-3-428B. Issue 7 requires minimum distributions at specified age, and this is to become compliant with IRC 401A-9 for required minimum distributions. That appears in 9-3-430C. And finally, Issue 8 is somewhat of an outdated reference that we currently have in our to an older federal law regarding military reemployment. Our provision currently incorrectly cites federal law for Veterans Reemployment Act 38 U.S.C. 4321, and the VRRA was replaced by the Uniformed Services Employment Reemployment Rights Act in 1994, and this appears in 9-3417C, 9-3609C, 15-5204H, and 15-5404C, 359608M, and 3529106K.
Chairman Landon? Mr. Chairman, the question that I have just has to do with the language, as you say, that's found in repeated places. One place it's found is on page 4, lines 16 through 19. And that language has to do with a member who's already vested who wants to make a one-time purchase of more time service credit. And so they are, starting on line 13, is they can roll over some of their previous retirement monies, it looks like, to buy more time. And then it says on line 16 through 19, unless received by the system in the form of direct rollover, that the contribution shall be paid to the system on or before 60 days after the date that it was received by the member. That almost makes it seem like if at a later time the person wanted to elect that, if they had taken that payment themselves, and if at a later time they wanted to use that money, then they couldn't. But I know what you're trying to do, and that is if a person elects to do that, you want it either directly rolled over to buy that service credit, or you want them to pay you within a certain period of time and not stretch it out forever. Do you see that as being any problem, or should we change the language a little bit in that to show that once that rollover is directed to be used to purchase more credit, that it should be received within 60 days? That's what I was trying to say, but it looks like it makes it to where it can't be done after that.
Representative Pedersen?
I believe the two issues there are circling two real separate pieces, and that is that you're looking at the 60-day rollover is done in to make itself compliant with IRC requirements as far as a 60-day rollover taking a distribution from another retirement plan, rolling it over into this plan, and you have 60 days to do so, and otherwise it is taxable at your income tax bracket plus a 10% penalty if you're underage. Under 59 and a half, the way that our statute would read. But I believe that the purchasing of the service credits with personal funds subject to is a separate issue. You purchase those service credits separately of your 60-day rollover, and I believe the two are separate. I don't know if that answers the question well enough, but perhaps I'd like to rehear it.
Representative Edmonds?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the bringer of the bill on page 9, 15 through 18. And you just went over this as, I think, number 7 of the issues. Subject to subsection A of the section N, WS 93429B, the legislature declares its intent that the system is intended to be a permanent system and has not been created for the purpose of income tax benefits. And, of course, 93429 says that, however, we do have the right to alter, amend, or repeal this. So just explain why we need to have this in as well when we already say that we have the right to alter, amend, or repeal.
Representative Pedersen.
This actually appears multiple times within our statute. Grab my notes and I show you another time where we actually do not have there's a separate section that we do not have to hold to any of these benefits. It's one of the pieces that if we have an underperformance or perhaps even a structural integrity within the fund, you're not required to do that. However, the Wyoming retirement system would like us to state, because the Internal Revenue Code is more comfortable with the fact that you intend these to be for permanent. What the difference is that, let's say that we start a fund, and this is not something that we've done, but they'd like it in statute. We start a fund that you can just start taking these assets and away, and you're essentially having it taken out pre-tax, so you're not having the taxable benefit and all these pieces done for you. And we're going to cut this system off in 10 years, but we're just going to use it as a quick way for wealth creation for some of the participants. Well, that's obviously not the intent of what we're doing, and that's not what the Internal Revenue Code would like to see or the IRS would like to see. So we're merely stating that the purpose of this is in perpetuity. Now, we do have the right to say that if we are structurally unsound at some point, that you can reduce benefits, and that's written within there. But we need to state this so that we're not stating that we're creating this little wealth creator that we're going to cut off in 10 years is really the purpose of that language.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to assist and take you back to the question of the representative from Sheridan County, that line 17, the rollover contribution comes from a qualified plan, and a qualified plan is one that is identified by IRS, and the sponsor was absolutely correct that the IRS says that if it is identified as a rollover, it must be placed in another qualified plan within 60 days or be subject to the federal income tax. So your response was correct. I just thought that I would help and amplify it.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions I have, I guess, is where they say you can roll in, bring in money from an annuity, or you can roll it in, and it buys back years of service. Is that the intent, or is there another part of the plan? I know a lot of people have bought back years of service. It fits into another description. and it paid out as a different type of benefit rather than based on years of service. Does this eliminate that and move all of these into that, or would you please explain that to me?
Going to have the ability to buy back.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. Thank you. I'll slow down my my mouth moves faster than my brain, so here we go. I will do my best to do this. What we're trying to do is make ourselves compliant with what is federal statute, and a lot of this for quick history was done with the Extra Act, and you allowed yourself the ability to move between qualified plans, be that a 401k, a 403b, a SEP, a SAR-SEP, the state 457 plan, and allow them to move between if you have termination of service in one and you've then become an employee in another section or another job, then you have the portability clause is really what this is. The only one that is separate of this is what is referred to as a simple IRA, and there's nothing simple about a simple IRA. It has the inability to move assets in or out of it unless it is from another simple plan. So by bringing this forward, we are just making ourselves compliant with the Internal Revenue Code. We're not inventing a new statute. We're just complying with the federal statutes as it stands with the portability as it pertains to qualified plans. I hope that does a better job of answering that question.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Pedersen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill 88 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 88 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 49. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 49, introduced by Representative Madden, an act relating to taxation and revenue, manufacturing, sales, and use tax exemption. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Anderson, Edmonds, Escobel, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek. No, Wallace. Signed, Representative Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Anderson, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 49 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. I'll turn over the explanation of the bill, the sponsor of the bill, a good man from Buffalo, Wyoming.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 49 simply moves the sunset date out 1 year, and we do that, or recommending we do that, so that the Interim Revenue Committee can study the issue during the 2010 interim, or during this year's interim studies. And any possible changes, therefore, would be based on the study or the analysis we come up with and our recommendations. In the 2011 session of the legislature. Now, the need for this was created because, unfortunately, the Joint Revenue Committee first became aware of this timing issue the last hour of the last day of our last meeting of the Revenue Committee in this last interim. And essentially, or exactly what it's doing right now, the sunset date is set to take hold at the end of this calendar year. All right, so if we studied it during the 2010 calendar year, we can't get back here in time to come up with a new recommendation for what it should be in succeeding years until after it's already expired. So this sets out a technical situation where you've got an exemption on equipment right now running through the end of this year, and if we didn't move the sunset date out, it would go to no exemption, and then if we have made a change a year from now in this body, it would go back to another change. So we'd have a total of three different policies, three different levels of taxes, taxation for the for this type of business. Now, we just don't think it makes us look good if we switch it that many times in a 12-month span, and that's the argument for it. Now, there is a handout in the box, just to give you an idea of the some of the salient features or results of using this tool for economic development. First of all, it's used. It's a real meaningful exemption, particularly for new manufacturing firms in state after state after state. So there's a competitive issue here as well to have this. Now, whether we have our set right is open to debate. If you go clear to the bottom of the points here, the bullet points, there is some offset to it. Annually, for example, if we move from fiscal's years 2008 to 2009, taxable sales in the manufacturing sector, in other words, businesses within the SIC codes that fall within manufacturing, they produce output that oftentimes is taxable. And the growth in manufacturing has afforded a $4.8 million increase in tax receipts. And, of course, this is not to say that it's all a net gain, because the tax exemption itself costs money, and it actually costs more money than this. But there is ways that we have, among ourselves, found that we can save a lot of money in this exemption by changing the administrative structure of it a little bit, and maybe changing what is defined as a bona fide tax-exempt manufacturing equipment purchase. But just a lot of things like that we are prepared to study during the interim. So that's, in a nutshell, the basic reason for the bill. If we had studied it in 2010, as we probably are during the year of 2009, we would have been doing it in time. But because we didn't have time to schedule it for the 2009 interim, this is the only reason we're bringing this request for you to extend it 1 year while we study it in detail. So that's the essence of it, and I will answer questions if I can.
And we do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to House Bill 49 and ask for your favorable consideration. Friends, what this amendment does is say, let's give this exemption a haircut. We've asked state agencies to cut their budgets by 10%, and what this amendment does is ask that we cut the exemption by 10% for the 1 year that the sunset has been moved. If we take a look at the fiscal note on the last page of the bill itself, you can see that state and local governments have foregone revenue from taxes on equipment ranging from $3.5 to $15 million a year. The last sentence says, on average, we should assume a loss next year of about $9.5 million. So what this amendment does is say, okay, let's let the manufacturers keep $8.5 million of the exemption, but let's return to state coffers $950,000. I think that's prudent, and so I ask for your favorable consideration.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to the amendment. The whole basis for this is to give us a year's time to really define what new equipment is. There is some contention around that it's been abused somewhat, and we can take a good look at it, find out what new equipment attract that new industry, which pays more in taxes than this ever exempts. And so I resist the amendment until we get this thing studied out.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment as well. I have a long history of opposing exemptions, but this is one that has basically a compounding effect to it. It's kind of like fishing. You dig up a worm out of your yard, and that's something that you've taken away, and you certainly get something from it when you throw it in the water and bring something back. And I'm reminded about the difference between 10% of the cost of government being reduced. These are things that bring money in the forms of sales taxes, which counter the cost of government. So, you could be throwing out, as we're using in this session, the baby with the bathwater.
Representative Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too have some reservations about it, and it's, it goes back to whether that's the right way to adjust this exemption. We think that there's a logical way to adjust the exemption. As I would understand it, this 90% amendment would be applied across the board to all types of equipment you purchase, whether it be simple replacement equipment or whether it's a new company coming in to manufacture something in the state. And I think that it's, in that sense, it's arbitrary. And the other thing I caution people on here is that there's an administrative dimension to this, too, because a lot of these companies have annual lease contracts, all right? And what this would require is that they'd, if we did this, we would say, well, they've got some months now to change their lease to reflect the fact that it's now taxable, or at least 10% of it's taxable. And then after we do our magic on it in 2010 in committee and bring it back, there would be another adjustment that these lease contracts would have to experience, too, unless we happen to agree with the 90% as being the ideal way to reform our policy on this. So I think that, we're not really gaining a lot by doing that. And if you get down to a community-to-community level, it wouldn't be worth all of the hassle of the administrative machinations that would be required for it. So I think I would urge caution on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm all in favor of the comments in general that we are thinking about it for the next year. But I would urge the body to have us think about it with $950,000 extra in our coffers. I do understand that there could be a little bit of administrative wiggle that would have to happen because of this, but I think almost $1 million in our coffer while we're thinking about what's best to do is the correct and prudent thing at this point. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the Revenue Committee. I'd like you to look at this issue of leasing equipment. Maybe the lessor should be paying sales tax because he's making money off of this, and the lessee should be tax exempt from it. He should be the one. We're looking at it. Looks to me like we're collecting from the wrong people.
Any other discussion on the amendment? We were on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please signify by saying aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has failed. We are back on the bill. The question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 49 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 49 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just if you don't have the updated list, remove House Bill 72. That was re-referred and it'll come back. And then move House Bill 58. It's on the second page. Move that to the bottom of the list. Thank you.
All right, we are on
House Bill 84. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 84, introduced by Representative Blickery, an act relating to motor vehicles, Gold Star license plates. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, McKim, no, Madden, Peterson, Zwanisser, Dave, excused, Hallinan, signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 84 do pass. There also is a Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 84, and I move it at this time. What it does, when the committee explored the bill just a little bit, what the bill does, as going to be explained here in a few minutes, is to provide a very special license plate to survivors of a fallen, mortally injured soldier killed in action. And what the committee did, to go down through the Standing Committee Amendment, you'll read above there where it says it deletes the word parents and inserts the word specified relatives, as the committee added a few more people that could apply for and receive one of these specialized license plates. If you go on down to page 2, line 8, the committee added, after parents, they inserted the words grandparents or spouses. So it would include the parents of or the grandparents of or the spouses of a fallen military veteran who has fallen in the line of duty. In addition, the committee changed the effective date from July 1st, 2010 to January 1st, 2011, and for the purposes of our county clerks added that and said it would be much easier to do that at the beginning of a license year as opposed to the end of it. Essentially, Mr. Chairman, that's the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I would urge your adoption.
Question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Cohey.
Also, Mr. Chairman, there was an inadvertent oversight in committee action of last Thursday, and I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 84. What it does on page 2, line 13 and 14, it removes the last sentence, fees collected under this section shall be deposited into the highway fund, where up above in the amendment that you just passed, the fees will all go to agency that produces our license plates, and under statute 313102, the fees go to that particular department anyway. So it's determined that the language found in lines 13 and 14 to be redundant and therefore should be removed. I would urge your adoption of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 84.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Question having been called, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill. Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of the full bill as amended. I would refer to the bill sponsor, the representative from House District 53.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives, this bill is about the people who bear the real cost of the wars that we've been waging since 2001. Those are the soldiers and sailors that are directly involved and their families. There was no tax raised specifically to finance this war, so we're not bearing that personally. And my reason for bringing this bill forward is that when a family loses their loved one in service to defend us, that's a lifetime thing that they have given to all of us. And I would like to see us move this bill for a Gold Star plate, which will help those families immortalize their loved ones that they've lost. It's a plate that would be only for grandparents, parents, and spouses, people who are directly bearing this loss. The cost is $30 and that's for the cost of the plate. And I just ask for your favorable consideration in this bill to honor our fallen defenders of freedom.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question. A few bills ago, we had an Armed Forces license plate fees, and they had lowered that from $50 to $20. And I'm just wondering, I think this is a great piece of legislation, I'm just wondering why this on page 2, line 5, it says $50 assessed by the Wyoming Veterans Commission. I would suggest that maybe the committee might want to look at that and figure out why those pieces, those two fees are different. I think this one ought to be lowered also.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I think there's no lack of sympathy on the part of this body. Our hearts go out to these families. But I want to take a moment back from the emotion of this issue and think about unintended consequences. And the first unintended consequence that I think of is if a individual having one of these license plates has a traffic violation, how is law enforcement going to react? Especially if that law enforcement officer was a veteran. And then I think of other people in our society. And I think of a parent who maybe has lost a child to cancer, and their brother or sister or grandparent. And so I really have a lot of concerns about going down this area. And it's not because like the introductory remarks, it's not because of lack of sympathy and empathy and we'd just do anything to change that. But I want us to very carefully consider this, because I wonder where we draw the line and like I say, what are the messages being sent? How can people react to these types of license plates? It just seems like it doesn't make the playing field even for all the people in Wyoming. And so, hard as it may be, I would urge us to resist this proposal.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, to my good friend from House District 42, with respect to the assessment, what the committee did, and I think I heard Mr. Chairman even vote for the Standing Committee amendment, but it wasn't well explained, that we're moving now to, as amended, in Standing Committee Amendment number 1, that we removed the, on page 2, lines 22 and 23, the last last sentence in that page was reinserted up, where on page 2, lines 5 and 6, the language of the $50 going to the Veterans Affairs Commission has been removed, and now what you must do is apply to the mechanism through the Wyoming Veterans Commission, but that the fees all end up going to the state agency, YDOT, for the reimbursement of the production of the plate. That's the way the bill is amended now. There is nothing goes to the Wyoming Veterans Commission. To my good friend from House District 30, with respect to the questioning of law enforcement and individuals receiving citations and things like that, the plate itself, as described to us by YDOT, will be constructed in a manner similar to those issued for other branches of regular military service, in that they'll have a distinct alphanumerical system on them, which will be completely distinctive as compared to anything else. And I think that answers the question. As far as the discussion on other personalized license plates, I'm unprepared to answer that.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, if there's ever a case for a special plate, I think it's this one, given the circumstance of the deployments right now and all these soldiers that may not be coming home for their parents and family. If I've learned anything as a freshman legislator is that this body has a sensitive pride to our Wyoming plate. I guess for me, all I care about is that it's not green. I was hoping to get a couple laughs off that one. I think this is a time when we can share that pride that we have for our plate with the pride we have for a fallen soldier. I look forward to the time when I may pull up to the supermarket or the 7-Eleven and see a family member that has this plate on their car. And I look forward to the opportunity to go over there and shake their hand, whether they're a parent, a grandparent, or a spouse. And I hope that you all welcome that opportunity. I think we heard the number, and I wish I would have wrote it down, but we've had over 50 people associated with the state of Wyoming that have lost their lives due to these wars. So it can kind of give you the scope of how many plates or how few of these plates will actually get distributed. So I urge you your favorable consideration for this.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, as to the question about a parent who's lost their child, whether they should have a plate or not, I am a parent who's lost his child, and at no time would I ever request that the state of Wyoming make a special plate for that happening. But I do believe that somebody who serves for a extended period of time or even a short period of time to defend our Constitution and to defend us, that they and their family do deserve this Gold Star plate, and I ask that you move it forward.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to make a few comments. We have a substantial number of individuals that are employed out of the state of Wyoming. I think it's in excess of 800 at the present time, which is the highest this state has gone out. And as you travel around the state of Wyoming, you'll find that in different houses and communities, you'll have a gold star and a blue star banner that's hanging in the various windows. It's kind of falls back to World War One. I know in the community I'm from, we'll find many of the blue stars, which I'm very happy to report, because gold star means that there's been a casualty. The individual is no longer, of course, with us. So this is what is springing forth on this particular proposed legislation, and I certainly rise in support of it. And if you attend these military funerals of people that are casualties of war, I have yet to see where there's not either a parent or a grandparent there in the individuals that are at those funerals. So I certainly would encourage the body to move forward to this legislation.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 84 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 84 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to do House Bill 65, Revisor's Bill, next.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 65. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Good morning. House Bill 65, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to the revision of inadvertent errors revisor's bill. This bill was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Practices, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Buchanan, Cohey, Connolly, Goggles, Illaway, Landon, Lubno, Simpson. Excused, Gingrey, Jorgensen, Philp, Korberg, and Throne. Signed, Representative Simpson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 65 do pass.
We were lucky to get this baby out of committee, but we did. We had various chairmen heading up their committees, which was fine. We did have a quorum, but there is a standing committee amendment. I have the proposed amendment. I would move at this time, Mr. Chairman, House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 65, and just go through that with you. As I go through the bill, just recall that the revisor's bill is to correct inadvertent errors, correct statutory references and language resulting from inadvertent errors. Thank you. And omissions in previously adopted legislation, correcting obsolete references, repealing fully executed provisions, and specifying applicability. As we went through this and managed in the Rules Committee, it was pointed out to us that there were a few provisions in here that went beyond simple housekeeping, and I'll walk you through those briefly. Page 2, let's go there. We have removed lines 11 through 16. This relates to the crime victims' compensation statutes, and it deals with what's called subrogation, the insurance term about repayment of someone for something that they have paid out, and how do they then recover what they've paid. It was determined that this is more of a substantive issue and needs interim consideration, so we've removed that from the bill. Page 3, beginning at line 24, we are striking this any reference to 59128, civil jurisdiction. Over to page 3 at the bottom, line 24, over to page 4, line 11. And this will be repealed if the lien bill passes, so we don't necessarily need this in here. If the lien bill doesn't pass, then we can take that up again. Page 6, lines 14 through 23 are being removed. This has to do with the Board of Coroner Standards and the makeup of the board. On line 22, it would have added certified dispatchers, issuance of identification cards, and certificates of, let me see, I didn't say that right. It changed the makeup of the board in a way that probably wasn't intended to be just a simple correction, and it's a substantive change that will need to be looked at further, so we took that out. Page 7, we took all of page 7 out. This deals with the same issue on page 3 on long-term care restitution. If a crime is committed and the perpetrator of that crime causes the victim to have to undergo some long-term care, that would be part of the restitution. So it's tied to page 2, lines 11 through 16, not page 3. And the question is, can you put someone on probation without having them being found guilty and require them to pay long-term care? So we've stricken all of page 7. And then over to page 11, we are taking out lines 1 through 8. This was dealing with elections for cities and towns, and we would like the Corporations Committee to review this in the Archaic Laws Bill and probably correct it there. It's more of a substantive change than we want in a revisor's bill. But that's the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
The question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Well, after that resounding vote, Mr. Chairman, I would answer any questions. The rest of it we did go through in detail about what each section meant. If you have any questions about that, I'm happy to answer those for you, but I would Stand for any questions, and if there are none, Mr. Chairman, I would call the question.
The question being called, all those in favor of Mr. Speaker's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 65 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 65 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again at 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Committee announcements. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet at about 5 afternoon. That'll give you a few minutes to run downstairs. Come back up. We're going to discuss House Bill 70, vacant lands. House Bill 23, business entities, reinstatement fees. House Bill 69, Secretary of State directives authority. House Bill 124, lien statement notice.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10 will meet today upon adjournment to hear House Bill 86, Medicaid Elderly Care, and House Bill 127, Medicaid Applications 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, at the noon recess, will take up again House Joint Resolution 9. We'll finish that one up this over noon. Tomorrow morning, starting at 8 a.m. in room H8, we'll take up House Bill 28, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act, which was continued from last Friday. We'll also take up House Bill 95, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act 2. And then at noon, we will deal with House Bill 113, Concealed Weapon Authority, and then House Bill 38, Driving Under the Influence Amendments, which was continued from last Thursday.
Chairman Comey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment today in room H10, where we will take up House Bill 109, Compulsory School Attendance 3. And we were to take up student assessment measures, but the sponsor of the bill has asked that we move it back to Wednesday. So that will be the only bill that we'll take up upon adjournment today.
Representative Brown, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not very often someone from Laramie ventures over here to Cheyenne, so I'd like to introduce Jackie Gonzalez, the Albany County Clerk. Give us a wave, Jackie.
The Committee of the Whole will stand in adjournment until 2 p.m.